So check this out. I got word that Hulu threw this crazy party in Beverly Hills with literally all of the biggest reality TV stars. I'm talking about all the Bravo-lebs. Candy Burris, Portia Williams, James Kennedy, Jax Taylor, even Captain Lee, and Kate Chastain. Here's the genius part. If you want to find out what happened at the party, you have to watch the commercials. Yes, I know I'll be tuning in and then signing up for a free trial to get my favorite reality TV shows at Hulu.com.
The Walking Dead, Season 10, Episode 11, A Night of the Seven Kings. I'm sorry, I mean Morningstar is over, but we are just getting started here. I'm Pusha Recaps. Hello, everybody. Josh Brigler here, joined here by Jessica Lease. Jess, was it a Morningstar, though? Was it really?
I thought it was a flail.
Should we just get the weaponry nerdery out of the way? Is that how we should kick this one off? Just get our Morningstar complaints in just from the jump. It seems like that was the only bit of feedback we got on Yon Twitters this week about The Walking Dead. It's like, was that a Morningstar or is that a flail? Seems like it was a flail.
I mean, if you're gonna rip off Game of Thrones that hard, I feel like you gotta come correct in the medieval weaponry department.
Yeah. Like Valyrian steel would have been great. A Morningstar is so the episode's called Morningstar. Daryl Dixon is going to have a weapon at one point, and we'll talk about that choice separately. But the weapon is allegedly a Morningstar, but it's actually a flail, right? It's the flail is like the ball and chain spiky thing. The Morningstar is just like you've got the stick and the spiky ball on the top of it, and that's it. It's not like a big, like, wind-up throwy.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time trying to get this right, and I believe that's correct. But also, Did they ever explicitly refer to the thing in his hand as a Morningstar? Because maybe that's where they get us.
Yeah, but the episode is literally called Morningstar, and then, like, its poster moment is Daryl Dixon picking up a flail. So they could have called the episode Flail.
They should have called the episode Flail, because I feel like that's what everybody was doing at the end of the episode.
Yeah, a lot of flailing, both in the discourse right now over the Morningstar versus flail debate, as well as in-universe in Walking Dead, Morningstar, which I joke as A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms, the episode of the final season of Game of Thrones right before the big battle midway through Game of Thrones' final season. We got like a smidgen of that battle in this episode, so is it like kind of a Knight of the Seven Kings slash the Long Night hybrid. But to me, it felt like this was really set up for a much bigger, much bloodier battle still to come. And so we got a lot of like, nice little character moments, some nice, some not so nice, as we may be. I don't know. Are we looking at saying goodbye to some of these people in the next hour or so, Jess?
I think the thing that makes that really hard is it really felt like they were in a very dire situation by the end of this episode. It did not look like there was an easy way out from it. And yet, then, not 5 seconds after the credits roll, they show a preview and it's daytime and everybody's right. A big open field and the horde is gone and they're still fighting and nobody appears to be dead. The only person I think that died was the guy that got lit on fire. I don't even think he got an in memoriam.
Oh, wow. They didn't do one for the poor sap who got sap bombed.
His strength was sapped and he got no in memoriam. I mean, maybe that means he ain't dead, but I'm going to say no respect for
we typically call him like cabin douche, Dr. Douche, but I don't feel comfortable calling him sap.
Look,
douche.
He got burned alive. I really.
The poor sap. The
I'm
poor
sure
sap.
He was a perfectly nice man with a family. And
as they often are. Walking Dead is like, oh, well, Game of Thrones got a lot of heat for doing a big battle in the middle of the night that nobody can see. So maybe they think it's going to be forgivable if they just like yada yada through the night and give us big battle in the daytime so we can actually see it. I'm inclined to forgive them if that's the case.
I guess. But then why stick people in the middle of the night in the middle of a terrible, unescapable situation? And we know they're going to escape from it. It just kind of saps all of the tension out of it.
Well, what if it's not the middle of the night so much as it is the final stars of the morning, a morning star, if you will. And it's actually like 5:45 a.m. And so like in 15 minutes, plausibly, depending on whether it's spring forward or fall back, they actually are about to hit the morning. So like actually daytime might make sense. Yeah. Yeah, it's possible.
I guess. Maybe everybody just got up really super early.
Yeah. Or they showed up at a very inopportune time. The Whisperers don't abide by any strict time code. I don't think anyone really
Zombies don't sleep.
Zombies don't sleep. Neither do we. We're going to talk about everything from this episode. I expect we will have a nice comic book zone conversation at the end of the podcast here. But most of the feedback was actually about the Morningstar. So, but you can send feedback to us whenever you want. TWD@postshowrecaps.com is our email address, or you can hit us up on Twitter @RoundHoward, @HaymakerHattie, @PostShowRecaps. Jess, where do you want to start in digging into this? There's so much to cover in this episode.
I think we're already talking a bit about the big battle, and I think that's probably a good place to start, because I know we're definitely going to want to talk about Ezekiel, and we're going to talk about Carol, and we're definitely going to talk a lot about Eugene. But I think we should talk about this big set piece, and we should talk about the plan going in on the Alexandria/Hilltop side. And then we should also talk about the planning on the Whisperer side, because I really got to give, I got to give the fishy to the side of the Whisperers, because this was a really well coordinated effort with a lot of out of the box thinking. So good on Beta for that.
Yeah, out of the tree thinking too. They're desapifying. I'm sure that there is an actual word. They're extracting the sap from the trees and injecting the sap into bags and launching the bags to the Hilltoppers and setting them ablaze. Fairly brutal stuff here in the world of the dead. I mean, rudimentary for sure, as is the Whisperers want, but also like more sophisticated than I would have given them credit for. Like, they're bombing the Hilltop. This is a surprise.
Yeah, this is the thing that really confuses me, actually, because they're certainly well studied in medieval battle tactics. And this was really some great thinking on the part of Beta, but it was so well organized. Clearly, they've done this before, and this raises a question to me. So why was this such a big honking surprise then? Because they have Mary with them. Mary has presumably participated in these efforts before. She has been with the Whisperers long enough that she climbed the ranks, was the only other person that got a Greek letter. She had to have been in on this. She had to have seen it before. Why didn't she be like, okay, they're going to send the horde after you, and then they're going to send the bags of sap, and you got to be ready because the sap is flammable, and then they're going to set some things on fire, and you just want to be ready for when that comes. Why didn't she say any of that? Why was this all such a huge, like, bolt out of the blue for these people?
I don't know what the timeline is on how long Gamma/Mary has been with the Whisperers. I don't know why I want to say, like, she said she didn't know anything about Dante. I think she implied that she was like a relatively recent hire. But even if she is, the Hilltop has Lydia.
Well,
Lydia has definitely been with the Whisperers from the very jump. So she should have something to report. She'd be like, oh yeah, so you know what my mom loves to do? She loves to march her entire herd right up to your doorstep and then shellack you with maple syrup bombs. It sounds pleasant enough. When's the last time you had maple syrup? I'm sure that would be nice. A little waffle Wednesday wouldn't be the worst thing, except there's also fire involved. She bombs you with it. You would think that Lydia certainly, if not Gamma, would have the read on what's coming. She doesn't really give them much.
Yeah. It's an interesting tactic, I think, that Alpha uses. And I think we've seen this a few times now where Alpha welcomes in the newest person deep into her inner circle right out of the gate and gives them a big, important job. And I think that makes them want to please her more. And we saw her do this with Dante. And maybe that's how Mary got so close to her right away. And we also, I think, arguably, we are seeing Alpha doing this with Negan.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that she falls fast for people.
Yeah.
Like she goes really quickly from like, we are all one monster animal thing. I'm the Alpha. None of you have personality. I guess we've really dedicated to the Russell Hantz thing. She goes very quickly from that to like, but you're cool. You specifically are cool and you get to have a name. We get to have conversations. We get to talk.
Could be that once you're enveloped in the Whisperer way of life for long enough, you lose your identity and your personality and you're just not interesting anymore. So anytime fresh blood comes in, Alpha's like, yeah, that person's way cool because they're not buying into all this Whisperer stuff.
Yeah. I mean, she's, despite what she says, she is only human after all. You know, people get lonely.
It's true. And she, you know, people need someone to beat them with a stick every now and then.
Yeah. And Negan is used to beating people with at least stick shaped objects. And, you know, we're talking about the syrup bombing and everything. But we also got some Negan tactics here, right? Like the roadblocks and everything. It's a shame that we seem to be in the place where RVs are all parked now for the most part. I know we've been on Winnebago watch recently, as we discussed last week. And I was having flashbacks to the season 6 finale where that RV just kept having to back up over and over again because I kept running into savior blockade after savior blockade. And Negan has pulled out the stops there. Daryl recognizes it immediately. He's like, oh, all right. Negan's with the Whisperers.
Yeah, but they've had 8 years, presumably, where almost nothing happened. That's why we skipped over all of it, right? We've had 8 years to think about all of the things that went wrong in the Whisperer War and all of the ways where we can be safer and protect ourselves and cope with threats. And they're so blindsided by this stuff. It's like they didn't do anything for 8 years.
Yeah, they were too busy developing the sorghum and getting like their trade fairs ready to really be thinking too much about battle tactics.
I mean, they eat pretty well. I give them that. And they have artisans. They have a fully functioning forge. That's pretty cool. But somebody's got to be on battle tactics duty all the time. And it's not just like we're going to get our giant Roman shields up and... P.S. They had an amazing race challenge where they had shields like that and you had to count like which soldiers were in a particular formation and then remember it. And every time they pull up those shields and are like, formation, that's what I think of. I think of like Chris and Brett trying to do the roadblock.
Oh, God. Who would be the best amazing race duo of the current surviving members of the Walking
Dead? I got to be honest, Josh, I've given this a lot of thought.
I believe
because
it.
You know, we did a Race of Thrones once upon a time and I thought about doing it for Walking Dead. But then I was like, if you lose on Walking Dead Amazing Race, you probably just get killed and eaten. And all of the challenges involve like not getting killed and eaten. And that was just depressing. So I didn't do it.
Phil Nehogan.
Yes. Although
that's all I have to.
You do want to see you want to see Alpha and Lydia as a troubled mother and daughter team trying to work together. You want Daryl and Carol as the best friends that might be something more, but occasionally
they sometimes fight. You know,
yeah.
They always love each other, but they'll sometimes fight.
They'll sometimes fight. And I think you want Judith and RJ as a team.
Are they allowed to run the race? I mean,
it's the zombie apocalypse, Josh. All of the rules have been suspended.
Age moratorium. Age moratorium is lifted. You get whoever is willing to play at that point.
It's true. It's true.
Whoever.
And I like their chances. And also, Judith and RJ are one of those amazing race teams where it's like they're really young and scrappy and they don't know much about the world, but their sheer strength and bravado gets them through to the end. And also one of them has all of the personality and you don't really know what the other one is like. And you kind of forget he's there half the time.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much. The Hilltoppers like are debating at one point, should we stay or should we go? And they have like a partial decision of like, we're going to get the kids out of here. And then there's the roadblock. And so they have to, they ran into a roadblock. Mm-hmm. So they have to turn around. They have to
take a detour.
They have to take a detour back to the hilltop. And at that point, they really have no choice but to stay and fight, right? Like, what better options do you think the hilltop had other than what they ultimately pursued?
They really don't, unless they have a, I don't know, maybe clear out the least daunting roadblock. Like, oh, darn, there's a tree in the road. I guess we can't go this way. Like, maybe move the tree. I don't know.
Yeah. Just like chop it up. Yeah. How many trees are they really surrounded by?
Yeah. I mean, how deep does that roadblock go? And some of the stuff that Negan did the last time he did this stuff, it got pretty gross, but it was not something you couldn't hack your way through.
Yeah.
And again, you've had 8 years to think about this. Like, oh, maybe the next time some dude like Negan starts blocking our roads, here's what we got to do to clear them.
Yeah, they should have a plan in place for that. Like, that should be a practice that
they should be doing Negan drills.
But how many of those people are even alive anymore from those days?
It's a good point, Josh. Like, every time they show somebody who has been around that long, and it's like some tertiary character, I think everybody here knows this person four times better than they ever knew Rick Grimes.
Right.
It's a very interesting way to view the show.
Yeah, I mean, the timeline is a little screwy, but it's like roughly 8 years after the all-out war. And how long is it that the group is traveling with Rick up to that point? Like 2 years, 3 years? So they've definitely, in the post-apocalypse, they've lived longer without Rick than they did with Rick at this point. So all-out war is a faded memory at this point.
Yeah, but maybe it's way too faded is what I'm saying.
I think you're right. One piece of feedback that we did have while we're on the subject of battles is from Matt McKellar, who said, didn't the old blacksmith dude, by the way, his name is Earl, like the show, didn't the old blacksmith dude say something about having catapults on the walls? What happened to the catapults in the battle? We didn't really see them catapulting back at the Whisperers. Should have had like a catapult battle.
Yeah, I mean, if you're gonna have a blacksmith that makes medieval weaponry, you need catapults. You need trebuchets. You need someone with a bucket of boiling oil on the top of the wall, pouring it down on the zombies. Am I right?
Yeah, probably a good idea. But I don't know, actually. Will the boiling oil actually stop the walkers, or will it just like grossify them even more? And now you have to contend with like still relentless walkers who just have like droopy skin. So now like you can't even like grab onto them if they get so close, because it'll be so slippery.
Well, that is a fair point.
And hot.
Yeah, now it's like they touch you, they burn you, and they give you zombie sickness. I mean, it would stop. It's an easy way to weed out any whisperers who might be in the crowd. There's that. That's but there, true. I guess we have made the point, like all the way back in the early days of Alexandria, we realized that you can't stop a zombie horde by setting them on fire, because then they just wander around and are on fire. And so that is a lesson we've learned about how to cope with the horde.
Yeah. I want to save our predictions for the outcome of the battle for the comic book zone. I think we've got like some measure of inside track from how the Whisperer War goes in the comics that I don't think it's fair to bring that into the main discussion here, but we'll have thoughts on that when we get to the comic book zone. Let's hop around. What else is going on in this episode? Love is in the air, not everywhere we look around, but in a couple of corners of the hilltop. Do you want to talk about Ezekiel and Carol rekindling for one hot afternoon delight? Carol and Ezekiel, that they This was never their problem, I guess.
Yeah, it looked like they had a pretty good time. And I think,
yes,
I think also Carol's just been bouncing around, like looking for anybody to have any kind of sympathy for her because she was a terrible person who almost got a whole bunch of people killed, may have actually gotten two people killed just because she's like crazy and ragey. And so she's just bouncing around. She's like, oh, well, Ezekiel wasn't there when I did this horrible thing that made all of these people think less of me. He still thinks I'm all right. So maybe I'll go and find some comfort there.
Yeah. But Ezekiel's been pining for Carol for quite some time. Like he was not thrilled that they broke up in the first place, I think. And we saw him in the first half of the season wanting to reach out to her to tell her about that he has cancer, that he at least suspects that he has cancer. And so he's been hoping for this for some time. And the only person he had really confided in about it is dead, right? Sadiq was the only other person who knew. So now Carol is his confidant.
Yeah. Well, now Daryl knows too, which was the best exchange in the whole episode. Was Daryl's like, "Are you okay, man?" And he's like, "Nah, I got cancer. It's cool."
Nah, I got cancer, and Daryl's like, "That sucks." Yeah, I found myself wishing that we had more Daryl and Ezekiel content along the way. Because the Daryl and Ezekiel content that I can think of is pretty good. There's this scene, but there's also from the start of the season when they're both waiting for Pirate Carol. They're talking about like birds, and, like there's like bird shit talk, and like do pigeons taste good? I thought that was fun. Not all birds taste the same.
Yeah, and again, it's one of those relationships like you imagine they're pretty friendly with each other because even though we never really saw them interact back in the day when we were first getting to know Ezekiel, they've had a lot of years to get to know each other.
Yeah. I would have liked to have seen it. I think it would have been nice. Do we think that Ezekiel and Carol are back in this for the long haul? Or do you think that this is just a flighty thing? Are they just flailing around for just one final romp of passion, or do you think that the king and the queen are going to get back to
I think it was just a final flail. Honestly, Josh, if you had me like do a death draft for this battle, I think it is not out of the realm of possibility that Ezekiel does not last the night. He does not see the morning star.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the show goes out of its way to like remind us multiple times. Ezekiel is dying anyway. It's like, and like even him and Daryl like make the pact, right? They're like, well, whatever happens, if one of us goes down, the other goes and gets all the kids out. Well, they're not going to kill off Daryl Dixon.
Talk about plot armor.
that man is alive for the long haul.
Everybody will die except Daryl. He will be the last man standing.
Yeah. I think we may need to like shift the needle and it now becomes, if Daryl doesn't die, we riot at some point because it just becomes implausible. Like, how is this man still alive? So, yeah, I think if the question is like between Ezekiel and Daryl, it's not even a question. So I think like look out for that in the next episode. If they're really setting that up, that's when you need to start the mourning process, not with a flail for Ezekiel, because it's probably going to be lights out relatively.
Well, how does a mourning process compare to a flail?
The mourning process is not attached to any chains. It's just a straight up sturdy process.
And the chains are purely metaphorical.
Yeah, yeah. They're not literal at all. Eugene and Stephanie, the long distance relationship of The Walking Dead. They met on Skype.
Are we guessing that in this world there was no internet pre-zombie apocalypse? Because Eugene really seems freaked out by the idea that he might be in a relationship with somebody he's never met. And I feel like, Eugene, if you were a nerd in the 1990s, you would not be freaked out by this at all, because that would be every single one of the relationships you'd ever had in your life.
Yeah, Eugene definitely had AOL message board girlfriends for sure.
He probably had
not even a question
had
in my
Prodigy
mind.
Message board girlfriends.
Yeah, it's possible.
He was probably meeting chicks on Usenet.
Yeah, it's like E-World or something like that.
He probably dialed into a BBS.
I mean, like, Eugene's been using the internet from the jump.
Just as nobody in the Walking Dead universe ever says the word zombie, I'm just going to go ahead and assume that this takes place in a world where there was never an internet.
I think I can get on board with that. I think that there's a strong likelihood that that's the case. Certainly, you don't hear Eugene radioing over to Stephanie, so ASL, like nothing like that.
I want a cyber.
Yeah, I want a
So also, Josh, what is
he met Stephanie in a private room.
What is the possibility? Yeah. What is the probability that Eugene is getting catfished?
Yeah, I don't think it's impossible. And I think that that's the tension right now. Like if Eugene is getting catfished by Stephanie, hook, line and sinker, as Jeremy Irons once said, he's the only person who said it. I think this would be very bad because like he's the one who like gives up the intel first. He says he's in Virginia and then Rosita comes and crashes the party and Stephanie goes radio silent for a while. And then when she chimes back in, she tells Eugene where to go. So they have a date in the books. They are going to meet IRL and they're going to meet in West Virginia. And it's about a week away. So much as like we're very concerned about Ezekiel and how we're not very concerned about Daryl, unless you see Eugene telling somebody the plan to go meet Stephanie at some point next episode, I think you can imagine Eugene's probably going to be safe moving forward into the next phase of the show. But is he getting punked?
Well, it's a good question, Josh, because we have seen people get punked over the CB radio before, or this is a ham right. radio, I guess, but you know,
yes,
you saw Alicia do it in Fear the Walking Dead, and she basically torpedoed what was already a pretty sweet deal and started talking to some dude and flirting with him on the radio, and then they all got pirate attacked.
Yeah.
So it is not inconceivable that this could be an elaborate trap being set for Eugene. But I would argue there probably is still some tension there. I was very concerned going into this battle that Eugene might not make it to his date because this is the most Eugene has ever had to look forward to in his entire time on the show. Like previously, the happiest he ever was when he was watching Abraham and Rosita doing it in a library.
Right.
And so the idea that there's someone he connects to on this deep level and he is like this affection is requited and he's kind of over this damaging crush he had on Rosita and he's growing as a character and he has something in his future, that is prime time to get cut off the knees. And I don't think it's that much of an issue that we didn't see him tell anybody else about the plan because we also didn't see him write anything down. Because gun to your head, Josh, right. could you tell me when they're meeting and where?
Gun to my head, I would say West Virginia in a week, but I would miss the town and I would miss the landmark. So yeah.
It's some rail yard in West Virginia. And even that is not right. narrow enough. And so I have to assume this is just a plot hole and we're going to hand wave it away with, of course he wrote it down. And of course he's going to bring friends with him and he's not.
Well, with his brilliant brain, he remembers.
He does have a very good memory. He probably just remembered it, but he also is smart enough that he will tell other people where he's going and why. Cause it's like, oh, we're in the middle of a battle. He's like, yeah, I got to go see about a girl. Peace. Have fun fighting the Whisperers. That's probably not going to happen. He's probably going to talk to people about it. And so if he falls nobly on the field of battle, Rosita could be like, okay, let's get a posse together and let's go meet Stephanie because we need partners in this skirmish and we need trade. We need to connect and reach out to other people. And that's what Eugene would want us to do. And then Rosita shows up and Stephanie's like, oh, I did get catfished. You were pretending to be Eugene this whole time. And then Neve and Max walk out and they're like, surprise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But Ezekiel's pure. There was no catfish, or Eugene is pure. There's no catfishing. He's like a straight shoebie. You know, he doesn't have any malintent in his social media heart.
He's a shoebie and not a Rebecca.
If the scenario you're sketching out comes to pass, Rosita will have to break some pretty tough news. All of that sounds so depressing. I hope that none of that comes to pass. I don't think I could handle losing Eugene right
now. I don't want to lose him either, especially now that he's really developing as a person in ways that they've not allowed him to before. And, you know, we've seen him have some real genuine moments of weakness where it's like, you don't even really like the guy. And in fact, when we first met him, there was no real reason to like him. He was kind of creepy and he was lying about who he was. And he's right. grown, he's become braver, but he's also continued to be kind of schlubby. And then he, you know, sells everybody out to Negan for a while, joins the Saviors pretty much entirely on the up and up for a very long time, does redeem himself, but it's still like you can't discount all of these things about him. And now we're in a point where we really do like him again. We have kind of forgiven him for all that stuff, and that would be prime time to kill him.
Yeah. I thought Eugene had a really cool idea this week. The hot wire, the electric fence, the electric clothesline. That was like severing the heads of all the walkers because it was hooked up to like his big ass battery. But it only lasted for like 10 seconds. So it was a better idea. Like, you know, is it the thought that counts when you're in the middle of war, or like you get no points because they all came through?
Well, that could be the reason that there was such a poor showing on the part of our heroes this week, because
Eugene had it
in the bag, and he was hanging out in chat rooms pretty much exclusively. He wasn't coming up with any battle tactics.
Yeah. When he was spying on Abraham and Rosita, is that like going into a private room where cybering is happening and you're just not saying anything? You're just being very awkward?
Maybe he's just like the one person that's always sitting in the IRC room that never says anything, and you wonder if he's a bot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, he's real. Believe it or not, he's the real deal. Now I can't stop thinking about Eugene on the internet. I feel like a flashback is warranted. This is how we get Abraham back too.
Yeah.
Maybe they knew each other. They were like fan fiction buddies on.
And then they met in Meat Space.
Yeah. It's exactly how it happened.
Yeah. I was also thinking about Eugene could get on the ham radio and talk about giving a bouquet of freshly sharpened pencils to Stephanie.
Uh-huh.
Do you think we should meet?
Yeah. What did you think of the music number when the wild wind blows? I'm not an Iron Maiden guy.
I'm not either.
I feel like, you know, is Iron Maiden, would an Iron Maiden be a more useful weapon in the zombie apocalypse than a Morningstar?
I don't think it would be very good on zombies, because an Iron Maiden is really only for one being at a time.
It's good for one zombie. I mean,
it would probably impale them in their cranium at some point because it's got all those little spiky things. But yeah, I mean, the Iron Maiden, you could get your zombie and be like, put them in the Iron Maiden, and the zombie would be like, excellent.
Yeah, I don't know why you would do it. You maybe like do like, maybe you cut the Iron Maiden in half. You have like Iron Maiden shields. And you like you stab forward with your half an Iron Maiden, and then like you quickly withdraw. It
you
seems
quickly
like a
impale,
lot.
And this is a problem with anything. Like, I think Daryl would have this problem with his flail that's not a Morningstar. I think Negan would have this problem with Lucille. I think anytime you have something with a lot of spiky ends on it, your problem is
a lot of things to get
you
stuck
get
on.
Get stuff stuck on it, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then it's like, oh, well, Lucille can't effectively beat anybody now because it's covered in like zombie guts and hair and skin, and all of the points have been dulled. Oh, yeah. I can't swing this flail around anymore. It's got a head stuck to it. It's really not the best. I think you want something more like a katana. I think you want Michonne's weapon. I think she had the right idea.
Why, just to go back to it, why did Daryl have a flail? Let's just call it a flail. Why is Daryl using a flail? Is there any reason other than it'd be really cool if Daryl Dixon had a flail right now? Is that literally Is it just like, let's give Norman Reedus
literally
a flail?
It because apparently he lost his crossbow.
Yeah. Is it gone?
I haven't seen it.
He's got it.
He must still have it.
He still has it. It's his iconic thing. You're not going to take the crossbow away from Daryl permanently, but he has like been busting out other weapons in this time jump era. Like he's got like his double daggers. He had like the fire axe that he threw at a burning tree that then chopped the tree in half with one shot. And now he's got a flail. So we're just like accessorizing Daryl.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's fine.
It's a lot of weapons. It's almost like they want to release some special edition action figures.
Yeah. I'll buy one. It seems fun. I'll do that. Daryl and Carol.
Will you buy one or will you buy 12?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah. I don't think I would buy more than 8. I think I'd buy 8 Daryl Dixon action figures. But that's my limit.
Well, they're quickly approaching that limit because I think he's had 8 different weapons this season.
Yeah. They could just throw them all in the same package, right? Or they are going to try and just fleece me for that sweet, sweet flail cash. You don't have the full set unless you've got the flail exclusive, Kmart exclusive Daryl Dixon.
With the vest variant with Judith's wing painted on the vest.
Yeah. Did you like the blue wing? The blue wing that Judith gives to Daryl, he seems to have a really good attitude about it. But part of me was wondering if Daryl's actual reaction was like, yo, she just messed up my jacket.
I mean, again, he's known her a very long time. He's basically helped raise her. I think he's going to be okay with it.
But he's known the jacket longer.
Fair point. Yes.
He might not be thrilled about it. It's like, you know, she screwed up my jacket. It's no good.
Yeah, I mean, did she screw it up or did she make it better?
I don't know.
I think it's an improvement.
I don't know. I don't know. It really pops. I guess it depends on how bold you are with your color choices. I think for me, it was maybe too bold. Maybe too bold. I think maybe like it messes with Daryl's whole like muted, subdued, dirty Daryl look. But like if we're going to...
But this is Daryl like coming out of his shell. This is a symbolic of Daryl embracing other people and companionship and light and the stars of the morning.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
Now he has a bright spot on his jacket because he has a bright spot of hope for the first time in the entire time we've known him.
Yeah.
It's a metaphor, Josh.
Yeah. You convinced
me. It's a metaphor.
You convinced me that it was the right thing to do. Daryl and Carol talk, and Daryl, she keeps wanting Daryl to just like come out and say, like, you hate me. Just tell me you hate me. But she says, this time, please don't hate me. And he says, I'm never going to hate you. But then he walks away. Did you think that was cold or appropriate?
He should have said, I'm going to start hating you if you don't quit trying to guilt trip me into not hating you.
Yeah.
Like, let me be mad.
Let
me feel my feelings, lady. Yeah.
Give me space. It hasn't been a day.
Yeah.
You know, this happened earlier today.
Yeah, you almost got my
at this point.
You almost got my almost girlfriend killed. I'm going to be mad at you for a little while and you need to be okay with that.
Were you surprised to see Luke back at the Hilltop? I know I was. I'd forgotten that that whole group came back from Michonne at this point.
I'd kind of forgotten where we left Luke. I knew he was still alive and still out there, but
he had like the big like farewell tour with everybody.
That's right, because he has a girlfriend at Oceanside.
Yeah. Now, why didn't he just stay at Oceanside?
I mean, I'm sure we're going to revisit that at some point.
Yeah, maybe, or he's just going to get sap bombed in a minute. We're not going to talk about it ever again.
Yeah, I mean, did you rewind that sequence a couple of times to make sure that the guy on fire was not someone we actually know?
No, I did not. Did you?
Yeah, okay. I wanted to make sure because we didn't know the person.
Yeah.
He didn't even get an in memoriam. And I doubled. That was my triple check was, is he on in memoriam? And they'll be like, oh, it was, you know. It was William. And we're like, oh, no, not William. Wait, who's William? Oh, he had a name, so he must have been important. Or could have been somebody right. We actually know. Like, what if it was like Scott or somebody?
Right. Yeah, I guess it's just random sap gets sap bombed.
Mm-hmm. Or sap.
Did you like the artwork that was on the wall at the Hilltop? There's like the sketches of like the pop art sketches of Rick and Herschel and Glenn.
Well, we've seen those before, Josh. Those showed up last season. Yeah. Jadis made those. It was a plot point like around the time that she hooked up with Father Gabriel, remember when that happened? Her thing was the thing she was doing to make herself of value to the community was she was going around and doing paintings. People could describe their loved ones and then she would do a painting of them. And this is how she and Father Gabriel get to know each other, because he describes his friend from church and she draws a picture of her. And then apparently this is a hot thing, but Maggie had a lot of these done. And a lot of the pictures on the wall are people that are important to Maggie. And I have read some speculation that the fact that Carol was looking at a picture of Glenn in this art wall was confirmation that Carol is definitely the one that let Negan out, because she wants to feel like she's letting Negan out for a good reason and that she's not just freeing the guy that killed Glenn to go and kill some more people.
Right, 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 right. That tracks for me. That makes sense. But that makes sense.
My question then is, I feel like we've not really gone back to the well of who let Negan out of his cell for several episodes now. And I wasn't even sure if that was something we were supposed to still care about, but apparently now we are still supposed to care about it.
I think that the show would like us to forget that that is a question, and then they will answer it with some kind of a reveal. You know, I think that could be on the way soon. That was one thing I was going to say, is the fact that Eugene's meetup with Stephanie is a week away. Gives us a little bit of a timetable, I think, for how much longer we've got with the Whisperer War. Feels like this could be resolved in a day, given the current situation, or it could be resolved as long as a week from now. But I think that we're probably in the relative end game of the story arc. I don't imagine it expands beyond this season. I think we see it resolved some way, somehow. But are we going to see it resolved even sooner than maybe we expect? Like, if we're keeping the Game of Thrones parallels alive, and I guess to lightly spoil the final season of Game of Thrones, like, are the White Walkers going to die halfway through this season? You know, like, are the Whisperers gonna get vanquished in the next episode?
Like, does Judith jump out of the woods and stab Alpha, and then all of the Walkers fall over dead?
Yes. Yes, that's what I think. That's what I think is going to happen. They're all going to turn to ice.
Yeah, I wish it was that simple.
It's another snow episode afterwards.
Yeah, like, just take out the queen and they all fall over.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the queen stays queen. Adios. One more thing before we get to the comic book zone. Do you have any thoughts about what was going on with Mary and Earl and Aiden or Alden? And they have the baby whose name is sometimes Alex or Adam, depending on who's talking, I thought.
They kept talking about an Alex. Yeah, they kept talking about an Alex. And I'm like, are we supposed to know who an Alex is? I didn't know there was an Alex. So I hope somebody who's watching this much more carefully than we are gets on Twitter and tells us what a bad job we're doing, because, of course, Alex is da da da. Because if you don't know, look, I feel better that you don't know, because it was bothering me. Like, were they maybe just like, oh, it's that kid has some four letter name and it starts with an A. It might be Adam. It might be Alex. We're not sure. I thought the child was Adam. But in any event.
Yeah, I thought that they kept switching the name. I thought that they kept switching the name, too. So I don't know.
Or is Alex like some random red shirt guy? Maybe that's the guy that was on fire.
Poor Alex. Oh, pour one out for Alex. I don't know. We'll find out, I'm sure, at some point. Is Mary gonna make it through the battle to have meaningful time with either Alex or Adam, depending on who it is that she needs to have meaningful time with? We'll find out soon.
Yeah, but I did think that Earl had a very valid point, that you left this baby in a field and I picked him up and I'm the reason he's not dead. I've been raising him, and maybe you don't get to just wander around freely at the hilltop and check out random babies. I think it was
right.
They were giving her a lot of room to breathe when they don't actually know what her intentions are, apart from Father Gabriel said that she had good intentions. So I guess that means it's okay for her to wander all over the hilltop and look at random babies.
Yeah, I think that she's been given a free pass. Like, she's got a hall pass to just, like, wander around while everybody else is kind of, you know, just, like, letting her do it and probably feeling pretty weird about it.
And didn't they learn anything from Dante?
Yeah. Nah, clearly not. Like, they still just like are pretty quick to trust a whisperer. I don't know.
It's not okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. The show is very fun right now. Sometimes I think it's actually really, really well done right now. And then sometimes it's, you know, kind of just like the goofy Walking Dead, and it's fun. You know,
that is what it is. Goofy Dead.
These guys maybe could, you know, they could learn a thing or two. Would be nice. Would be great. All right. Comic Book Zone.
One final thought. We didn't really talk about this, but I wanted to talk about the song choice because I thought it was kind of great. I, like you, I'm not an aficionado of early 2010s Iron Maiden. This song is a pretty deep cut, and the only reason I knew what it was because I immediately started Googling the lyrics because I thought it might be another one of those situations where it's supposed to be a mysterious country singer in the Walking Dead universe that's apparently uber famous and nobody knows who it is yet. It could be one of those songs written by the actress that plays Beth, but no, it was an Iron Maiden song, which seems to be very on brand for Eugene. And I kind of love that he and Stephanie are bonding over their love of metal.
Yeah, I think that's fun.
It's super fun.
I hope that she's not catfishing him. I think that'd be nice if they could actually like form a band together, maybe whenever they meet.
Yeah, or they could make it work. They could just sit together and listen to records.
Yeah.
I mean, I hear that's a thing that's fun to do.
Stuff. That's what I've heard as well. All right. Let's get into the Comic Book Zone. Much to discuss. Colin Latchford, take it away.
Comic Book Zone. Tune out now as spoilers aren't what you want to know. Avoid hearing plot points about Rick or Michonne. Now's the last chance to turn off during the intro. Comic Book Zone.
All right, Jess, we're in the Comic Book Zone. Spoilers are free to reign here in from the Walking Dead comic books. What do you think? I mean, this is not dissimilar to how the Whisperer War ends in the comics, right? Like, the big herd comes, the horde comes to Alexandria instead of the hilltop. But, like, they're able to I guess the hilltop gets ravaged, too, right? Like, the hilltop actually does get pretty messed up before they come to Alexandria. So do we think that that's what's about to happen here? Or do we think that, like, a final stand is about to occur? And, like, the Whisperers are actually going to get taken care of in short order here?
I mean, it would be really disappointing if they just dispatched the Whisperers in the first 10 minutes of the next episode. That seems like we've had a lot of buildup here for not very much payoff.
10 minutes seems quick, but like a full episode that's a big action-oriented episode and it's following the Game of Thrones model. Do you think something like that is possible, or you think that they're going to extend it out a little farther?
I have to think that they're going to extend it out a little farther. I think we probably have a battle and then we have another battle to kind of settle it. I think we probably... we have a couple of bosses to beat, right? And the way that it was done in the comics was we took care of Alpha and then we took care of Beta, and we had a couple of tries at Beta before we finally got rid of him.
Yeah. I really don't know. I get the feeling that we're close. I think the fact that we have a week until Eugene is supposed to meet Stephanie puts a real timeline on it for me, where it feels like I think the end of the season could move into like mini arc territory of getting right into the Commonwealth stuff. And if that's the case, then like we don't have a lot more time to spend on the Whisperers. But is it one episode? Is it like two episodes? Michonne's got to show back up before this is all done. Otherwise, this is, you know, not officially finished, I don't think, until Michonne shows back up with her Virgil army, whoever she's going to find on Bloodthirsty Island or whatever it is, Bloodsworth Island, but Slugworth. Do you think Michonne shows up soon? How soon do you think Michonne's showing up here?
I think we get a flashback episode showing everything Michonne has been doing. I think we get our like East style set piece where we have Michonne on the island and she's the only main character that we see. And then I think she probably comes in with the cavalry. And she probably picks up some people from Oceanside and she comes in and she saves the day. And I would guess that she maybe sacrifices herself to save everybody from the last gasp of the Whisperers.
Yeah, she gets the Andrea death. In the comics, yep. Andrea gets bitten while rounding up the herd. You think something like that is what'll happen to Michonne?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Michonne has really taken on a lot of what Andrea was doing in the comics.
Yeah, I could see it. I think yep. It writes itself.
So, Josh, the question I have is, I've heard a lot of speculation that we get our big Negan Alpha confrontation next week, and it seems like it's about the right time. So I want to get your take on that.
So you think that Negan might kill Alpha next week?
Yep. I think we see them going into a shack together, and it might be a love shack or it might be something else.
Yeah, I can see it. I mean, I definitely am of the mind that Negan was released by Carol, that like he's in cahoots with her to like infiltrate the Whisperers, get closer, attain some semblance of atonement for everything that he's done by, you know, bailing everybody out of trouble. I don't think that the show is going to pivot too far away from the fact that Negan is infiltrated the Whisperers in the comic. And if he kills Alpha here, it would be unexpected timing. And we've still gotten a lot of Alpha on the show. But I can't imagine it's going to be done the exact same way as the comic. I think that they gave us their riff on that with the sex scene between Negan and Alpha. But what I can absolutely imagine is Negan leading Alpha to a cabin of some type, like you're saying, and Carol is there. And then Carol gets to have the finishing move, especially because presumably that's where Henry died, right? Henry died in a cabin. You can imagine Carol like really relishing the opportunity to take out Alpha.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a direction it could go in. And especially, I think we've pivoted away pretty far from the Negan Alpha dynamic as it is in the comics, because we added a sexual component onto it. And we also have Negan like really throwing in, like there was a point this episode where he's really throwing his lot in with the Whisperers. He's setting up the Negan roadblocks, and he presumably was the reason that a couple of people died. And if he really is being redeemed, that's got to be weighing on his mind pretty heavily. And it is almost enough in there for me to think maybe he really did do another heel turn. Maybe he isn't going to save the day. And I think I'm supposed to be thinking that so that I can be extra happy, whether or not I've read the comics, I can be extra excited when he turns out to have been playing the long con on Alpha.
Who are the top people to die in this battle? Is Ezekiel number one with a bullet right now in terms of like important people or important-ish at least?
Yeah, I think definitely Ezekiel is way up there. I think he's ready to make a sacrificing move. I think Kelly could be a contender. I think somebody from Magna's group probably bites it in this next episode.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still so shocked that Luke is still in the mix. I really thought we would lose him earlier in the season. But the fact that he's here, like Luke is on death watch for me until he dies as the first of Magna's group to die in the comics. I definitely am expecting, because he's one of the heads on Spikes, I believe. Mm-hmm. So is Ezekiel. So is Rosita. So these are three characters who are from the heads on Spikes in the comics who are still alive on the show, who are now here at the Hilltop. It's not a coincidence that most of the main characters are at the Hilltop right now, other than what, Father Gabriel and Michonne? Like everybody else is here right now. That's one of the things that's like sticking out to me as this could be a final stand between the Alexandria safe zone and the Whisperers, just because everybody's here right now.
It's true. Like all the named characters, like they left the red shirts in charge over to Alexandria. That's never good. I have been hearing a lot of speculation about the death that Father Gabriel gets in the comics, which is a particularly gruesome and awful death that happens at the hands of Beta.
Yeah.
And people are wondering if he's going to get that same death here. And he's much less of a presence in the comics. So it would be a pretty big gut punch to watch like Beta suspend him upside down and gut him in front of a bunch of walkers. and it would make us really, really mad at Beta.
Yeah, but would they, since Gabriel isn't here, would they flip that death and give it to a different character? Like, would they give it to somebody who's here at the Hilltop right now?
Like the Denise effect. I think it's very possible that they give Gabriel's death to somebody else. But we also got a pretty good closure moment from Gabriel the last time we saw him. So I wouldn't be surprised to see him die. I think they're not going to cue that closely to the comics. But if it happened, it would not shock me.
You know, if it's somebody who is like a character who you recognize, a character who's had a role in the story, a character who you could name, or I guess in my case, mostly name, and you wanted to like replace Gabriel with this character, like I could imagine Beta eviscerating Alden, or even Earl. Like this feels like something that could happen to either one of those characters coming up in the Hilltop.
Yeah. How far down the ladder would you have to be before it would be a random death? Like if Diane gets that death or Scott.
Oh, Diane's dead. Diane's toast. I have no faith that Diane is going to make it out of this thing alive.
No, it's going to be Diane and Daryl at the end of the series.
Just the archers. That's two archers against the world.
Yeah, that's how the series ends, like closing shot. My hopes for, I'm sure we don't get it next episode, but maybe in two or three episodes, I am very much hoping we get the shot of Negan breaking Lucille over Beta and having it make no difference whatsoever.
Yeah, I hope so too. Especially because he's just been reunited with Lucille. That I think to have that moment is very good in the comic. I would love to see that on the show.
Yeah, because again, like we've seen a few times where Beta probably should have been dead if he was a human being, and he turns out to be mostly unscathed. And I think that would be like, oh, finally, like Lucille can take him out. We saw what Lucille did to Glenn and Abraham. Yeah, of course. And then like Beta defeats Lucille with his hard cranium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that'd be good. I think that'd be good to see on the show. What else? What else in terms of comic books popped out at you from this episode? Or any predictions you want to make?
I think that mostly covers the comic books. I mean, we could talk a little bit about the Commonwealth of it all. We could talk about...
We're gearing up for it, for sure. I mean, the fact that this thing is a week away, that Eugene and Stephanie are about to meet. I really love Stephanie from the comic. I'm really excited to meet her in person. I don't know who they have playing the character, but clearly they've cast somebody as the voice already. I wish that there was like a Shazam for voices. Or
Josh,
like
you can acting. Google it.
I guess
that information is out there.
Okay, well, do I want to Google it, or am I gonna be happier with the surprise?
It's nobody from any shows that I have seen, but it's a known actress. I think she's gonna be fine.
Okay, cool. Well, I love the character. I'm excited for Eugene to find some happiness.
Although
I think they'll follow the beats from the comic, I think, pretty closely with that story.
They're in the middle of a war. Why is Eugene making a date for a week from now? Is he that confident that they're going to be totally done fighting the Whisperers in a week?
Yeah, he's pretty stoked on his hot wire.
Also, how long does it take to get? It's like 300 miles away to get to Charleston. It's going to take him a week to get there. He can't just drive it.
Yeah.
So he's going to be like tomorrow. He's just going to be like, have fun, guys. I got to go. I got a date.
Yeah, I did like that line. It's like, I got to live. I got a date.
Yeah.
Running late.
It was adorable. And I really want these two crazy kids to make it.
I think that they will. I think Eugene's making it out of this. I think that he's going to be okay. I think Ezekiel is not. I think Carol will be all right. I think Daryl will be fine. I think Luke is dead. I think Yumiko is going to make it. I think Lydia is going to probably survive. I think Rosita is probably all right. Earl is probably all right if they want to like keep some of the characters that had some impact in the final Walking Dead issue alive on the show, but who knows? Maybe not. So Earl could die. Aaron's going to be all right. I think Alden could bite it here. He's kind of run out of road. I think there's not a lot going on for him anymore.
Well, if Maggie Negan's comes back.
Fine. Yeah, true. True, true, true. They can return of the Mac. Return of the Mag. That could be a thing. I like your prediction. I think Kelly is in trouble, maybe, unless she needs some sort of reunion with Connie before they can write her out. And then if they touch a hair on Jerry's head, we quit the show.
Yeah, we're just going to we're going to have one final podcast episode that's just a screaming for an hour, and then we're going to be done with it forever.
No, we'll keep going. You won't expect us to enjoy ourselves.
Yep. And then we'll just get a bunch of iTunes reviews or they hate the show so much. Why are they still watching it?
We can't win. We can't win. Either we like the show and that's implausible, or we don't like the show and why do you bother? So we're just playing it the way that we like to play it now. All that noise be damned.
That's right.
Hopefully if you're listening, you're enjoying what we're putting down. We're having a good time here on the Walking Dead podcast. Post show recaps is lit right now. Jess, I know you and Mike are you're deeply engaged in Star Trek Picard.
It's so good, Josh. It's so good. We're loving it so much.
I'm behind, and I hate that I'm behind.
Oh my God. And there's pizza in the last episode. There's pizza. You love pizza, and you gotta see it.
Space pizza?
It's not even space pizza. It's like the opposite of space pizza. You gotta listen to it. You gotta watch the show, and then you gotta listen to our podcast where we talk about the pizza for most of the podcast.
Oh my God. Can you give me a little more context? Why is there pizza? Do they go to Italy?
No, they visit Riker, and Riker makes pizza for them.
Incredible.
Yeah, incredible. It's incredible. Right. And it's worth seeing. And honestly, even if you're not a super hardcore Star Trek fan, Star Trek Picard is the best that Star Trek has ever been. We're having a really great time covering the show, and we would love to have you on board. So if you got CBS All Access, fire it up. You can get caught up pretty easily and get caught up with everything that Mike and I are talking about.
Star Trek Picard is the best that Star Trek has ever been?
Yeah, that's my hot take.
Holy crap. Okay, cool. I think we're three episodes in. We're really enjoying it. Emily and I are. And she loves Riker. And I think that she's going to be very thrilled to find out that he's making pizza. So we'll get to binging. Great podcasting between Jess and Mike, so check that out. We've got a lot more on post show recaps. The return of Westworld is imminent. We're gonna have a recap. Our Westworld recap is going to be returning, myself and Joe Garfine. We're also adding a weekly Westworld feedback show with rotating special guests. We've got a really fun roster of people who will be joining us for those bonus Westworld podcasts. Lost Down the Hatch, it continues. The Other 48 Days is this week. So we're talking Anna Lucia and Mr. Echo and all those people. Better Call Saul, Antonio and I are trying to figure out a time to record our recap of this week's episode. Still figuring out the timing on that, but keep an ear out for that show if you're watching Better Call Saul. And the Curb Your Enthusiasm podcast has just a couple more episodes left before we shut that one down. A very rowdy podcast between myself, Rob, Akiva, and Allie Lasher was on the podcast this week. It's the first time I've ever been on a podcast with Allie Lasher. It was a great time.
She's a delight.
It was a lot. It was a lot, but it was fun. I had a very, very good time. Jess, any articles coming up? Anything you want to plug?
Nothing recently, but I will have some more articles coming, I'm sure, at some point in my life. Yeah, it's basically this and Picard all the time.
Nice. Well, this is a good life to live. This and Picard is certainly not bad. We'll be back next week talking about the fallout from Morningstar. What do we think the episode will be called? Night Sun?
No, it will be another. It will be another weapon, but it will be another inaccurate weapon.
Halberd.
Yeah, we had a halberd last week. So
did we?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that was what Laura was wielding before she got baited.
How did she lose with a halberd?
Because she didn't kill him. She should have just killed him, and she didn't kill him.
She killed him. She had the halberd. She should have just done it. All right. Get your questions in for next week's show at Round Howard, at Haymaker Hattie. That's us on Twitter, at Post Show Recaps as well. TWD at postshowrecaps.com. Our email address. Subscribe if you have not done so already. We are wherever you get your podcasts, including Spotify, relatively new. We're very excited about that. Ratings and reviews, greatly appreciated. Until next week, everybody, take care. Bye-bye.